Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Garantaraj, Shima Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Go Premanandi. So what did we discuss last week in our Bhakti Vedanta course? All mobile phones off at this point, please. What do we discuss? Okay. Any other points?
Pure devotees arrive in this world to show as an example to the ordinary people to follow them.
So we're hearing in this chapter about the life and the glories of Ambarish Maharaj. And tonight we'll continue. And we'll hear about his interactions with Devasa Muni. This is a very famous pastime in the Bhagavatam. Key memory verses were in the last section that we just covered, you know, earlier in the chapter. And these are very important verses, very well-known verses. This pastime is very well-known. It's very important. And tonight we'll hear about how Devasa Muni and Ambarish Maharaj deal with one another. And ultimately how Krishna deals. Not tonight, but he will get involved directly in the next couple of months. So. Okay. So tonight we'll go from verses 31 to 48. Tomorrow night we'll probably finish the chapter. Following the regulative principles of Maha Abhishek, Maharaj Ambarish performed the bathing ceremony for the deity of Lord Krishna with all paraphernalia. And then he dressed the deity with fine clothing, ornaments, fragrant flower garlands, and other paraphernalia for worship of the Lord. With attention and devotion, he worshipped Krishna and all the greatly fortunate brahmanas who were free from material desires. So what we're learning from the Bhagavatam, as we've learned many times, this is called Grihastha Dharma. So as we see, if you go through this verse, we've seen the purports, Prabhupada has discussed this many times, this is the duty of the Grihastha. The duty of the Grihastha is to worship the deity, especially. All the ashrams are meant to worship the deity. But especially the Grihastha becomes purified by deity worship. Because of all the four ashrams, who is the most contaminated or materially conditioned, entangled in the material world? Ultimately, it is the Grihasthas. Who is making that noise? It is the Grihasthas. One time, Prabhupada was on a morning walk. I think it was in Paris. And Prabhupada turned to his disciples on the walk, and Prabhupada said, "Why are the Grihasthas in Maya?" And everyone was stunned. Everyone just looked at Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, "Why are the Grihasthas in Maya?" And then after a few moments, no one said anything. And then Prabhupada said, "That is all right, that is their position." So the Grihastha is in Maya, because everyone in this material world is in the bodily concept of life. But if one is actually a brahmachari or a sannyasi or a advanced vanaprastha, he is more free from the bodily concept of life. Whereas the Grihastha is very much conditioned, very much in the bodily concept. That's why we're in Grihastha ashram. Grihastha ashram means you are admitting that you are conditioned by the material energy of the material world. So to get free from that conditioning, Prabhupada mentions in his purports many times, for a Grihastha, his dharma, or it is necessary for the Grihastha to worship the deity. Because deity worship purifies the subtle body and allows one to transcend the bodily concept of life. Now, Prabhupada explains that there is the Bhagavat Vidimag and the Pancharatrika Vidimag. Bhagavat Vidimag, Bhagavat means Srimad Bhagavatam. It is the path of hearing and chanting about Krishna, which is what we're doing now. So this is the principal mag. Bhagavad Vidhi Marg. The rules are of hearing regularly the Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada explains that the parallel track, like two train, the train is running on two parallel tracks, then the pancharatrika means the scriptures that describe the process of deity worship. They're called the pancharatra. So these pancharatra scriptures, they describe deity worship and many rules and regulations which we have to follow in life in order to keep ourselves in purified consciousness. So generally, it is said, Prabhupada explains this in the beginning of the Adi Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada says that just by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra, you can go back to the spiritual world, Goloka Vrindavan. But then Prabhupada explains, however, most of us cannot simply chant the Hare Krishna mantra to a degree that we will go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Therefore, we need to follow the Pancharatra system also simultaneously. Which means, as Prabhupada explains, you need to accept a guru. You need to accept initiation. And accepting initiation means first initiation we have in ISKCON. Second initiation, or Diksha, means deity worship. Now, that is one of the primary points of receiving the second initiation, Gayatri Mantra, permission from the guru to study the Vedas and to perform deity worship. So by performing deity worship, what takes place? Then one purifies the subtle body and one's consciousness so that when one chants the Hare Krishna mantra and hears the Bhagavatam, one will become purified. But if one does not, to perform deity worship simultaneously, his hearing and chanting may not elevate him sufficiently. So you need both simultaneously to purify your senses, because deity worship means engaging the senses. Hearing and chanting means at this point in time, really we're engaging one sense. We're hearing, Shravana. But the other senses are not so much engaged at this point in time. The person who is speaking is also engaging the sense of speaking, speech, vacha. So we're becoming purified on one level, but still during the day, our senses need engagement. That's why we worship the deity, to purify the senses. And we engage in so many different devotional activities to purify the consciousness, to purify the senses, so that when we hear and chant, we'll get properly purified. We'll be able to listen to the mantra and get purification. And I've said a number of times that myself, I've been worshipping Giriraj, Govardhan Srila, for nearly 10 years. And because I worship every day, either through Manasa Puja or through direct worship, then every day because I'm doing the deity worship, the seva of the deity, then I'm getting purified and I know that my subtle body is becoming much more purified than by not engaging deity worship on a daily basis. It's helped me so much in my sadhana, in my Krishna consciousness, in my advancement and evolvement in Krishna consciousness. So it is necessary to make the hearing and chanting potent. One needs to worship the deity. So here it is being stressed in the Bhagavatam again that one needs to worship the deity to purify one of bodily attachment. Grihasthas are very attached to the body. That's why we get married. Pumsastriya maituni bhava metam hridaya grantim ahu. The Bhagavatam says that pumsastriya, the maituni bhava, or the attraction between the body, bodily concept of life, of the sexes, between male and female, is the binding element of the material world. Basically is how everyone is bound. So how to free ourselves of that attachment? By deity worship. That is one of the principal ways. Grihasthas need to worship the deities so that they can purify themselves of attachment to the opposite sex, to the material attachment, to the material form which we're attached to at this point in time. So, any points? What's that? Because I find, see, if you look at the room right now, it's very dirty. And I found that I was bringing him, because I brought him for, I think, 8 years or something, many years I was bringing him. But then sometimes I walk in here, I don't feel comfortable bringing him in. I haven't got time to come and clean the theatre before I arrive. And now I actually, only for the first time this year, he's always with me. Always. You know, whenever I travel, he's always with me. For the first time this year, I've left him at my ashram with my wife to look after for the first time. So it's one or two nights I'm away from him now, which I've never done before. I always liked to have him with me. But then I used to just keep him wherever I stayed because I'd bring him here. It's dirty here. I don't actually like. if I knew I could bring him to a clean place every time, then the last few years, that's my reason why. So if you want to see him, you have to come to the farm. Have darshan. Any other points? Yeah.
You know, said the chanting of the name.
Yep.
Is not different from Krishna.
Yep.
Abhinatam Mahamuni. And then it also says somewhere that Lord Chaitanya came, in the form to spread this movement. So, is the chanting not enough?
Yeah, if you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, then Prabhupada explains, for you it will not be enough. Hypothetically it's enough, but we won't become purified just by chanting in this age. That's why we do deity worship simultaneously. That's why Prabhupada established deities. You know, some people become purified just by chanting, but not many. Devotees struggle just chanting 16 rounds, so then how are you going to chant all day long? You know, there's a system of chanting, then devotees can't chant for, 32 rounds, 64. It's very difficult, so.
Then I heard that when they were installing a deity in Vrindavan temple, Srila Prabhupada said that the verification happened because the devotees were chanting, not that they were worshipping.
No, he didn't say that. He said the jagya of the priests who came, he said that did not install the deities, the chanting installed the deities. That's what he said. He didn't say anything about the deities themselves. Otherwise he wouldn't have installed the deities. So in Kali Yuga we need deity worship. That's the point. I understand. I know your point. But the answer is that you need to worship the deity. Or Tulsi Devi or something like that. So, any other points? Speak to your guru. Take instruction from your guru. Any other points? Okay. Thereafter, Maharaj Ambarish satisfied all the guests who arrived at his home, especially the brahmanas. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose herbs... Did I jump on? That's right. He gave in charity 60 crores of cows whose horns were covered with gold plate and whose hooves were covered with silver plate. All the cows were well decorated with garments and had full milk bags. They were mild-natured, young and beautiful and were accompanied by their calves. After giving these cows, the king first sumptuously fed all the brahmanas, and when they were fully satisfied, he was about to observe the end of Ekadashi, with their permission by breaking the fast. Exactly at that time, however, Devasa Muni, the great and powerful mystic, appeared on the scene as an uninvited guest. So this is another element of Grihastha Dharma. The first element is deity worship. Prabhupada mentions this again and again in these purports. And the other element, which he mentions, which is very important, is Dan. You must give charity. That's how Grihastha has become purified. Because people in this day and age, they're very attached to money. Above all other things, practically. Money has, in many ways, has become God in this age. The money is the goal of life. So, as a Grihastha, you become purified by giving that money to Krishna. The system actually is 50%. That's actually the system, Rupa Goswami says. In this day and age, that's highly improbable or practical. Therefore, you have to give something. Every week, whatever your wage is, so you get $1,000, then you have to work out how much you want to give to Krishna every week. And you have to have a set amount. So ideally, you give $500. But for most people, that's not practical, because then you can't live, because the cost of living these days is very high. So then you give $100. Or you give $50, or even $10. But, give something, that's the point. And you know when you're becoming purified by giving charity, when it starts to hurt you. That's when you know you're getting purified. Anyone can give $10, it doesn't even hurt. you know, you put $10 in the donation book, that doesn't hurt. But when you give like, you know, $300, $500, then you know, you start feeling a bit of pain, right? That's purification. Because you're giving something to Krishna. That's when it becomes tapasya or sacrifice. Like that. So in order to get purified, you have to give substantially. So you work out how much. That's up to you. But every week, the grihasthas, they should give something to the temple. Just like we have the Varsha Puja program all around ISKCON in this temple. So it means every, you know, $1 a day or $5 a day or $100 a day or whatever your system is. But every day you should be giving something. And then you can give extra whenever you want, you know, to your guru or to festivals or projects or something like that. But you become purified. As grihastha, if you neglect charity, you will become, you will not advance. Unless you're a Brahminical grihastha. Brahminical grihasthas, they're very poor, they don't have very much money. So they give their time, their energy, their words, right, their intelligence, and ultimately their life. So that is how they become purified. Even if they can't give so much financially, but they can give other types of charity. And ultimately, all of the devotees, regardless of who they are, we don't just give money in charity, but we need to give other things also. And we need to give our time, our energy, our intelligence, our preaching, our life to Krishna. So many things. Unacceptable, Leela Mai. Oh my God. Any other points? I've noticed. They count every cent. It's easier to get the teeth out of their mouth than to get their money. People are very attached these days. Too. Any points?
Oh, you said that when somebody gives money to Krishna and it hurts him, so that's the purification. The Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that he has to give money to them. What about charity? Without any grudging mood or something, it cannot be because of charity.
Yeah, because it means when you give to Krishna, you know, I know for myself when I give a little bit, you don't notice it. Anyone can give $10. You go to the hundi, you put $10, you don't feel it. But when you give a substantial amount, you feel it. You feel like, oh, I gave something, I sacrificed. So that's the point. The point I'm trying to make is when you feel like you've actually sacrificed something, that's when you get really purified. I mean, $10, you get purified, but not really. Because you can use $10 for anything, but, you know. But when you give $100 or $200 or $500 or something, then that's when you start feeling, oh, I gave something. And then you think about it. You put $10 in the box, you don't even think about it. You put $500 in the box, you think, oh yeah, I gave $500. How are we going to eat this week? You know, I gave $500. So it means when you start giving more, that's when you start feeling the purification. Any other points?
What I understand that not that you feel hurt, I think you feel a bit of hardship in living.
You have to do some austerity.
You feel happy to give, you don't mind that one, but then you feel a bit hardship. So when you feel a bit of hardship in living, that's the hardship, not that you feel it.
Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had that disciple. He used to get the money. He was poor, but he used to get the money. He used to give everything to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And then his wife would have to come to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and say, can you please give something back? Because he gave everything to you. We can't even feed the children. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur would give her, he would give everything and he would give her something back so she could maintain the family. So that's the mood of full surrender. Like that. So you have to be practical. Maintain your family because they're devotees, but also give enough to Krishna that you feel purified. Any points? After standing up to receive Devasa Muni, King Ambarish offered him a seat and paraphernalia of worship. Then sitting at his feet, the king requested the great sage to eat. Devasa Muni gladly accepted the request of Maharaj Ambarish, but to perform the regulative ritualistic ceremonies, he went to the river Jumuna, where he dipped into the water of the auspicious Jumuna and meditated upon the impersonal Brahman. So here, the Bhagavatam is giving us the hint of why Devasa Muni got into trouble. Ultimately, he was a Brahmavadi. He was an impersonalist. And Rupa Goswami explains in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion, that if you are impersonal, in other words, if you're engaged in jnana and tapasya, and you're too much engaged in austerity, but not for Krishna's pleasure, the heart becomes hard. And when the heart becomes hard, it is a disqualification for bhakti. So even as devotees, we should not perform too much austerity, which is not for Krishna's pleasure, because the heart will become hard, and then you cannot become soft towards Krishna and towards others. The nature of devotion, or bhakti, is that it is soft-hearted. The nature of a devotee is that he is soft-hearted. So Devasa Muni, he became angry and disturbed over such a small incident. It wasn't a big offense. Maharaj Ambarish did not do anything terribly serious. A small transgression maybe was there, but nothing very serious. But he pulls a hair from his head, throws it on the ground, and tries to kill him. It's like, you know, if someone, you know, does a little offense to you and then you try to kill them, it's imbalance. So ultimately the Bhagavatam is saying, Prabhupada is saying here, he is an impersonalist. He is a Brahmavadi. He's not a devotee, because a devotee would never act like that. What devotee would do that? You know, you came a little bit late to the home program, devotee's house, then you want to kill the devotee. It's like Leela Maya, she always comes late for my class, so then yeah, she walks in, I say, I will kill you. I would have killed her 10 years ago if that was the case. So that's not the system. The system, a devotee doesn't become so angry that he wants to kill the person. That means it's not Vaishnava. The Vaishnava will not act like that. You'll still come late. I'll know which ghost it is, because it'll knock on the door, but it'll be like quarter past. Oh, it's Leela Maya. She's back. At least she still comes to the class. So that's the point. The point is a devotee would not act like that. The Bhagavatam is saying he is a Brahmavadi. He is an impersonalist. An impersonalist, maybe they'll do like that. A materialist will do like that. But a non-devotee will not do like that. Just like I was in the car, you know, driving up here, so I was listening to the radio a little bit. So I listen to the radio and then, you know, some wars are happening and there's on the news today about some Muslim person in Australia, teacher, and then he said some things in class and then that was on the news and they're saying, you know, and then they're talking about conflict in the world. And I was thinking to myself, why is it there is conflict in the world? Why is one person killing another person? Right? Because they're materialistic in consciousness. Because a devotee will never do like that. A devotee will never cause problem for another person. Even we hear in the fifth canto that when Jad Bharata, he became Maharaj Bharata, he became Jad Bharata, and he was walking and he was careful not to step on the ants. That's how a devotee is like. That is a devotee's consciousness or personality. A devotee won't even cause harm to an ant. What to speak of another human being? Or a tree? Like that. That's why I tell all the devotees, I tell them 100 million times, don't use the paper plates here in the temple. Because every time you use the paper plate, you're harming a tree. A chair, just so you can take your prasad. And every year, the temple has to spend 40 hours on the notice. And if all the devotees start coming, you know, I see the devotees, they do it all the time. They come from home to the temple, they get like 6 paper plates, put all the prasad of parada, and take it home. If you brought a metal tiffin, right, you would save the temple probably $100 a year on the amount of paper plates that you take home and waste, right? So If all the devotees did that, we'd save the temple like $20,000 a year or something. Not, you know, it's serious money. So devotees don't think like that. So we should be, as devotees, we think, I should not harm a tree. And by eating, every time you eat off a paper plate, you're harming a tree. Right? You're harming a tree or an insect. What to speak of another human being. So why is Devasa like that? His consciousness is materialistic. He's not a devotee. Devotees do not think like that. Devotees try to protect other living entities. That's the point. So, any points?
You cannot control the anger. You cannot control the anger.
The non-devotees?
But the Brahma, the rishis, they cannot control the
anger. If we do both the tapasya, the heart becomes very hard.
If it's not for Krishna. If you're doing tapasya, but it's not for Krishna's pleasure, the heart becomes hard. Any other point?
Could it be a test from Krishna to elevate the...
Everything is a test from Krishna.
To elevate from Krishna.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
So he came just at that time.
So. Yeah. Krishna is testing Ambarish, and he's also, because in Madhurya Kadambini, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, why has the Pandavas suffered so much? So what is the answer? The main answer is to set an example for us. Right? Why would Krishna put his own devotees through so much difficulty? To teach us. So why is Krishna allowing Ambarish to go through this? To set an example to us. So that we learn how to behave. That's why Krishna tests the devotee. To make set an example. So a devotee acts properly and then others see, oh, that's how I should act also. In the meantime, only a Muhurta of the Dwadashi day was left on which to break the fast. Consequently, it was imperative that the fast would be broken immediately. In this dangerous situation, the king consulted learned brahmanas. The king said, to transgress the laws of respectful behavior toward the brahmanas is certainly a great offense. On the other hand, if one does not observe the breaking of the fast within the time of Dwadashi, there is a flaw in one's observance of the vow. Therefore, O Brahmana, if you think that it will be auspicious and not irreligious, I shall break the fast by drinking water. In this way, after consulting with the Brahmanas, the king reached this decision. For according to Brahminical opinion, drinking water may be accepted as eating and also as not eating.
When Maharaja Vrishya, in his dilemma, consulted the Brahmanas about whether he should break the fast or wait for Devasa Muni, apparently they would not give a definite answer about what to do. A Vaishnava, however, is the most intelligent personality. Therefore, Maharaja Vrishya himself decided, in the presence of the Brahmanas, that he would drink a little water. For this would confirm that the fast was broken, but would not transgress the law for receiving the Brahmana. In the Vedas it is said, Apo Snatitam Naivishitam Devishantam. This Vedic injunction declares that the drinking of water may be accepted as eating or as not eating. Sometimes in our practical experiences we see some political leaders adhering to Satyagraha will not eat but will drink water. Considering that drinking water would not be eating, Maharaj Ambarisha decided to act in this way.
Any points?
So it means that the Russian only didn't notice?
Didn't know what?
That drinking water.
Yeah, he knew it, but he was just angry.
Yeah.
So, any other points?
And what's the meaning of Muhurta?
Muhurta means 48 minutes.
48 minutes.
Yeah, that's called Muhurta. Any other point?
Body is very fixed. Here you can see in other religions, performing an austerity, performing because you know you really wanted to fix the past, you did not come back. So you can see that, and then Prabhupada says in his intelligence, it's calling to him the determination of doing austerity, because he was performing by pleasure of.
Yeah, it's good. Anything else?
What happens if we don't pray to Jaisa Mata?
It's not considered to be auspicious, and it says you do not get the same benefit. Just like last week, we had the Ekadashi, and there was only 7 minutes. 7:20 to 7:27. And by the time I found out that it was only 7:20 to 7:27, it was about 9:30 in the morning. Because then I read the email, it says, no, you've only got 7 minutes. So I had a look, I missed that. So did I feel different? No, not really. Like that, because I still broke, you know. I didn't break in the exact time, but, you know, like that. So, you know, maybe there's something. For a devotee, you know, for one who's following, like, the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas, and you're one who is a smarter brahmana, who follows all the rules and regulations very strictly, yes, it's very important. For a devotee, we should follow, you know, because normally the breakfast time would be sunrise, which would be 6 or 6:30, till about 9:30, 10, 12 past 10, something like that. So we should break. Usually I break in the time, you know, usually, like that. But, you know, we should try to follow things as much as we can. But for a devotee, even sometimes, like, you know, you have to break by 12 past 10, and for some reason I don't break till 10:30 or something, then I don't feel major reaction. But we should try to follow these things as much as possible. But Lord Chaitanya says, when you're chanting the Maha Mantra, what's the second verse? Nam namakari bahuda nijit savashaktis. Tajatripta niyamataha swanane na kalaha. Means there's no time which the Maha Mantra is bound by. You can chant any time of the day and you get the benefit. Whether it's auspicious time or an inauspicious time, you chant, you'll get the benefit. So in our bhakti process, because it's based on chanting and hearing, then even though we may not follow everything else perfectly, but those things are gradually burnt up, those discrepancies. So you follow as much as you can, but even if you can't follow everything perfectly, still it's okay. It's not like, you know, but we should follow. I try to follow everything as much as I can. At least then, in June, we have Nirjal Ekadashi. So usually I follow that. It means I don't drink water and I don't eat for that whole Ekadashi. And then I try to make up for all the other, because all the other Ekadashis, you may do some small discrepancy or something. But yeah, so if you can, then do one and then clear it out. But even Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada, it was 1974 or 75, 76, like that. They had the Radha Damodar party, and all the devotees were going out on book distribution. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj, he said to Prabhupada, shall I keep everyone back on Nirjala Ekadashi? Everyone chant 64 rounds and just fast, and not drink any water, and do full Nirjala, and chant 64 rounds? Or should we send everyone on book distribution? Prabhupada said, send everyone a book distribution. He said, they'll get more benefit. So in our process, the benefit is more the service to Krishna, the preaching, the hearing and the chanting, more than following all the rules and regulations perfectly. Well, that's it.
Is that?
Yeah, that's another pastime where the devotees said, oh, we can't go out and preach because we're too weak. Because we're following Ekadashi, we haven't got sex. So they said, then ekichari and go. Break your Ekadashi and go and preach. If you want, so the point is, the bhakti is more important than the rules and regulations. You know, Hari Kesh Prabhu, who was one of Prabhupada's early disciples, he was preaching in, I think it was Poland or Hungary, or one of those countries, back in middle 70s. A very, like, Eastern Bloc country, communist country, like, you know. And Hari Kesh Prabhu, he was there, and he came back, and he said to Prabhupada, he said, we can't get any food practically. So you can get potato, cabbage, if you're lucky. And it's very hard even to be vegetarian. Everyone there eats meat. It's hard to be even vegetarian. So he said, it's very difficult to preach there. And Prabhupada said, so eat meat. Prabhupada said that. He said, so eat meat. And then Hari Kesh Prabhu, he was shocked. You know, imagine Prabhupada said to you, eat meat. And he was shocked. And he said to Prabhupada, what about my consciousness? Prabhupada said, damn your consciousness. He said, the preaching must go on. So that's an example of, you know, the rules and regulations being broken for the main essence. Higher purpose, yeah. For Krishna's pleasure, that's the point. We're more concerned with Krishna's pleasure. So he went back to those countries, he didn't eat meat, he never ate meat. But Prabhupada was just making the point. Any other points?
When we do the Ekadashi, we eat and we drink water as well. So what's the difference between observing the time and...
For our Ekadashi is very light.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're here in Melbourne Temple, Ekadashi is more opulent than... there's no austerity anyway.
So we drink water...
Yeah, even Ekadashi, you know, like it's curd, sabji and everything. It's not. There's no austerity. Yeah, I know what you mean, but what I'm saying is that, yeah, there's no austerity for us. ISKCON's not really about austerity if you look at it. I mean, ISKCON's really about preaching. That's the austerity, which is there. So, what does Prabhupada point out? Ambarish Maharaj is known as Daksha. Daksha means expert. One of the 26 qualities of the devotee that Lord Chaitanya gives to Sanatana Goswami is Daksha. Daksha means a devotee is expert. So it means that we have to become expert. As we practice devotional service for a number of years, we have to become more expert. In other words, you don't have to consult the senior devotees all the time about everything. You should become expert enough that you know what to do. You know what the guru will say. You know what the Bhagavatam says. You know what the Gita teaches. You know what Krishna wants. So you act appropriately. And if there is some if you need clarification, you go to the senior devotees and you ask, what should I do in this circumstance? But a devotee should become first class. First class means he knows what to do. He knows what the spiritual master wants. So Ambarish Maharaj was Daksha. He said to all the Brahmanas, what should I do? Everyone was silent. No one said anything. So then he thought, because he's a devotee, he's the most advanced devotee. So then he thought, okay, best thing is I just drink some water. So when we fast, we should follow as strictly as we can. If we can do nirjal, then you do nirjal. Like when Prabhupada first introduced Janmashtami, which means we fast till midnight, when he first did that in the 60s, when he first started the movement, some devotees found that difficult. They never fasted before in their life. In India, people fast, but in the West, it's not such a common thing. So Prabhupada said, if you can't fast, then drink water. If you can't fast on water, then drink milk. If you can't just survive on it, then have fruit. Right? And Prabhupada didn't say you can have vegetables, but he said no grains. So if you're doing Janmashtami, you know, for the kids, if the kids can't do it, then they can eat, no problem. If the woman is pregnant, she can eat, no problem. If the person is old, they can eat, no problem. But everyone else should do as much as they can. Like on Janmashtami, I always do nirjal on Janmashtami. Because I can do it. I guess by 7 in the evening, it's difficult. Because you're thirsty and you're working in the kitchen and you're doing service. So it's difficult, but you do it. So we have to do some austerity for Krishna's pleasure. If you want to advance in Krishna consciousness, don't take the easy path. If you always take the easy path, you will not make advancement. You have to do some austerity for Krishna. That's how you advance. Any points?
The king is to be a Raja Rishi that can...
Saintly person. Yeah. best of the Kuru dynasty. After he drunk some water, King Ambarish, meditating upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, waited for the return of the great mystic Durvasa Muni. After executing the ritualistic ceremonies to be performed at noon, Durvasa returned from the bank of the Jamuna. The king received him well, offering all respects, but Durvasa Muni, by his mystic power, could understand that King Ambarish had drunk water without his permission. Still hungry, Durvasa Muni, his body trembling, his face curved and his eyebrows crooked in a frown, angrily spoke as follows to King Ambarish, who stood before him with folded hands. "Alas, just see the behavior of this cruel man. He is not a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Being proud of his material opulence and his position, he considers himself God. Just see how he has transgressed the laws of religion." That's all. What of a bundle of people? Can you read it?
Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur has diverted the entire meaning of this verse as spoken by the Vasamuni. The Vasamuni used the word, there is some sasya, to indicate that the king was cruel. But Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur interprets it as it to mean that the king's character was glorified by all the local people. He says that the word then means by all the local people, and the samsasya means of he, Ambarsa, whose character was glorified. Similarly, one who is very rich becomes mad because of his wealth and is therefore called Sriya Unmatasya. But Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura interprets these words to mean that although Maharaja Ambarsa was such an opulent king, he was not mad after money, for he had already surpassed the madness of material opulence. Similarly, the word Isa Manina is interpreted to mean that he was so respectful to the Supreme Personality of Godhead that he did not transgress the laws for observing Ekadasi Parana, despite the thinking of Durvasa Muni, for he only took water. In this way, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura has supported Ambarsa Maharaj and all his activities.
So what are the points here?
Meaning is that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti glorified whatever the Durvasa Muni said. He said he did not say anything on it.
Yeah, so we'll see this especially in the 10th canto, which we will begin to study next year. That in the 10th canto, especially when you get to the pastimes of Krishna and the gopis, Krishna Chakravarti Thakura in his commentary, Saritadarshini commentary, practically everything Krishna says to the gopis has a double meaning. So this shows the potency of the Sanskrit language and of those who are learned in the Sanskrit language. They can understand, even though Durvasa is speaking very heavy words to Ambarish, but actually he's glorifying Ambarish. If you just take it another way, if you read the Sanskrit a different way. So this is why Srimad Bhagavatam is considered to be the topmost rustica scripture. Because if you're a rustica Vaishnava, then you can see so many hidden meanings within the text. And actually, it is said in by the Rasacharyas, when you say something indirectly, it has much more potency than saying it directly. So, Burujampuru makes that point in My Glorious Master, that pastime where he's with Prabhupada, and he gave Prabhupada the ring as a gift. And then later on, when Prabhupada was having his massage, Burujampuru was sitting there, and the devotee was massaging Prabhupada. And they said to Prabhupada, they said, "Oh, Prabhupada, where did you get that ring?" And Burujampuru was just there, and he just gave it to Prabhupada half an hour before. And he said, "Who gave you that ring?" And Prabhupada said, "Oh, somebody." So when you do things indirectly, it's much more, there's much more rasa than by saying it directly. So that is the science of rasa. That ultimately, that's what the spiritual world is constituting of. Krishna and the gopis, Krishna and all the devotees, everything that they say, there's another meaning to it. And that increases the pleasure of the pastimes. In this world, everything is very boring. To a degree. It's much more pleasant when there's rasa involved. Any other points?
Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained Atmarama verse in 18 different ways to Sarvam Bhattacharya.
64.
And then Sanatana Goswami again asked to further elaborate, and then he explains again in another 50 something. So total that becomes 64 different ways.
Any other points?
Who was Shri Vishnu and who is in this picture?
He's one of the Manjaris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know the name?
The name? I can't remember which one. We could find out which name, which one it is. It's written down. It's mentioned that most of our acharyas, they are Manjaris. Bhaktisanta Saraswati Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Baladev, Vijayabhushana, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Narottama Das Thakur, and then back to the six Goswamis. It said they're all Manjaris, and they're passed on to Krishna.
They were passed on, actually.
Someone was going to murder
Vishnu
Chakravarti, and then they walked through, and then suddenly a beautiful girl walked through. So he turned into his Manjari form, like that. And then he turned back into Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, and the person was going to murder him realize, you know, that he's actually not from this world. So, yeah, it's a famous pastime in Vrindavan. So, any other point?
Yeah,
so,
I did that for the
what is it? Yeah. Yeah, famous pastime. So, one who is Matsura. Matsura means envious. He will always find faults in others, whenever, even if there is no fault. That's the nature of envy. And we see that in ourselves, in our own consciousness. Sometimes we find fault in someone, and there's not even a fault there. That's what envy means. It means you're looking for the fault. That's the consciousness of the fly. As Prabhupada explains, the fly always looks for the dirty things, the garbage. But the bee is always looking for the sweet things, the honey. So a devotee is meant to be like the honeybee. He's always looking for the sweet things. Even though there's so many faults, but we look for the good thing. Whereas for a non-devotee, like Devasamuni, so many good qualities. Maharaj Ambarish is a pure devotee. He's obviously got good qualities, but he's just looking for the defect. So that is his downfall. And it's our downfall as well. That's what's stopping us from going back to Krishna. Why can't we go back to Krishna right now? Why are we not pure? We've been practicing devotional service for a number of years. Why are we not pure? Because we still have envy in the heart. We see envy, we see faults in others, even when there are no faults. We see faults in, we criticize in our mind, in our words, our speech. And therefore, we are not attractive to Krishna. Krishna is only attracted to someone who is near Matsura, who has no envy in the heart. Ambarish Maharaj had no envy. Even though Devasa did this to him, he didn't react. Right? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, even before all of this happened, the Lord had said to Sudarshana, the chakra, he said, protect him. He said, if anyone ever tries to harm him, protect him. Because he was such a pure devotee. So as soon as Devasa tried to attack him, then Sudarshan just came and killed the demon immediately. So the point is, do not look for fault in others. Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Instruction, what is the qualification of an advanced devotee? He does not try to look for faults in others. That's the one thing that we need to learn. Even in your mind.
This forgiveness is the quality of the
time. Yeah. Yeah. Any other points? Okay. Maharaj Ambarish, you have invited me to eat as a guest, but instead of feeding me, you yourself have eaten first. Because of your misbehavior, I shall show you something to punish you.
He came in the noontime. Not even in the morning.
He came in the morning, but by the time he did everything, it was noon. So.
I mean, today he came in the morning.
Yeah, probably had to break Kodashi at 10:30 or something. And then Dvarsha said, okay, now I'm going to go and take bath. So by the time he comes back, it's like, you know, Brahmanas take bath, they take bath and they chant mantras and like, it's a whole thing. You know, so by the time he got back, you know, so. Shriram Prabhu, you can read the purport.
A devotee cannot be defeated by so-called mystic yogi. This will be proved by the failure of Durva Samani's endeavor to chastise Maharaj Ambarish. Harav Abhartyasya Kuta Mahat Gunam. Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 18th chapter, 12th verse. One who is not a pure devotee of the Supreme Lord and has no good qualification, however great a mystic, philosopher, or good worker he may be, only a devotee emerges victorious in all circumstances, as will be shown in this incident involving the rivalry between Durvasa and the Maharaj Ambarish.
What are the points?
Devotees always have Lord support. Always back up.
Lucky, huh?
Devotees.
So, any other points?
Prabhupada mentioned so many times in the previous cantos also that if a materialist has perfectly executed his duties and, you know, the duties are perfectly done, their austerities and all that, and a devotee might not have perfectly executed his devotional service, still they are much higher than the materialists who are perfectly realizing their duties, executing their duties and all that. I think somewhere in the earlier canto that's also very well mentioned.
Yeah, that's our philosophy. Any other point?
Durvasa Muni, he was so elevated, he is the son of Bhakti Muni. And he is the, I mean, sort of incarnation of Lord Shiva. Such a great man. And if we perform something like that, it must be, I mean, Lord Krishna's Veda. He can't do such a bad thing.
No, Prabhupada explains Brahma body, so he's not a pure devotee. Yeah, he's powerful, but he's not a pure devotee. I mean, only a pure devotee can act properly. One time Prabhupada got on the plane with Indrajumna Swami, before Maharaj was a Swami, and the devotees were going through the customs. There's four of them, Prabhupada and three others. And then Prabhupada and Indrajumna Swami got through, and the other two devotees, they were waiting. So then Prabhupada turned to Indrajumna Swami and he said, "Non-devotees have no good qualities." He said, "Do you understand?" And Jinnah Swami was just looking at Prabhupada. Prabhupada said it three times. He said, "Non-devotees have no good qualities. Do you understand?" It doesn't mean that non-devotees have no good qualities. I mean, we see many non-devotees have very good qualities. But it means eventually, if you do not surrender to Krishna, by the association of the material energy, you'll develop bad qualities again. But only a devotee cannot develop bad qualities because he remains constantly in association with the spiritual energy, and then he becomes completely purified. And then he cannot have any bad qualities once he's completely purified. So we see here that Krishna always protects the devotees. That's the point. One of the main messages of the Gita, Krishna says, "Declare it boldly, Arjuna, my devotee will never perish." So we understand that Krishna will always protect the devotees. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, even a beginning devotee gets protected by Krishna. You see, so many times, you know, we're all just beginning, but so many times we get, you know, happens to me all the time, practically every day. Krishna does this and he does that, and just everything just falls into place. Because he's looking after the devotees. Unless he wants to give you a hard time. And what do you call that? I call that special mercy. Sometimes it gives you a hard time. That's called special mercy. Prabhupada said that. So this is Krishna's special mercy. When you go through difficulty, then he's bringing you closer to him. That's why he does it. He wants to bring you closer. He wants to take away all your attachments to this world. So he gives you a special mercy. Just to see what's really in your heart. Are you really surrendered to him or not?
I think that's what he did to the Vasamuni too. Just attract him.
Yeah, he crushed the Vasamuni's pride.
That's what. To attract him.
If he becomes a devotee.
He became a devotee.
I hope so.
But he went to Brahmaloka after that. To glorify Vishnu.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's still doing that. You always hear about the Vasa, he's always. He's like Lord Shiva, he's got Ashutosh. He's always cursing someone all.
And he did that before he met Amishmara.
Yeah. He's in many, many pastimes, Devasa. He's very hot-tempered, that's his nature.
He's so good to continue, Mahani, though.
Some people are devotees, but they're still very hot-tempered, just their nature. So he's like that, he's very hot.
I think he had the addiction to continue, and the Pandavas were born.
Yeah.
So he did so many good things, too.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, and he gave a benediction to Srimati Radharani as well. You always see the good in others. Okay. As Devasamuni said this, his face became red with anger. Uprooting a bunch of hair from his head, he created a demon resembling the blazing fire of devastation to punish Maharaj Ambarish. So this is an overreaction. You have to be very careful when you're dealing with devotees. Don't overreact. You know, someone does a little thing and then you suddenly explode on them. Like Devasamuni, you pull out your hair and you throw it on them. Like that. So you just have to be careful. You know, don't overreact. Because sometimes devotees do something to upset us. But you don't overreact. Don't like pull the hair and like throw it on them. Don't go too far. What's that? Taking a trident in his hand and making the surface of the earth tremble with his footsteps, that blazing creature came before Maharaj Ambarish, but the king, upon seeing him, was not at all disturbed and did not move even slightly from his position. So, why was Maharaj Ambarish undisturbed? Brahmabhuta prasannatma naso chitti na kankshiti. Because when you're on the Brahmabhuta platform, when you're spiritually realized, you don't react to anything in this material world. The only reason we're affected by the material world is because we still think we are a product of the material world. But when you understand you are Brahma, when you understand aham brahmasmi, I'm spirit, you don't become affected by anything in this world. Nothing affected. So why do we become affected? We become affected because we still think I am the body. As long as you think you're the body, you think you're the mind, you'll be affected by this world. So he had this huge demon right in front of him, about to kill him, and still he just remained unaffected. He thought, well, if I'm going to die, I die. Then you go back to 6th canto, you've seen Vritasura. Vritasura, the same thing. He was about to be killed by Indra. Actually, he said to Indra, he said, kill me, come on, kill me. He said, it is your destiny to kill me, so kill me. Right? And then Didichi went to, was approached by the demigods. They said, we need your bones to make a thunderbolt to kill. He said, okay, then take my body. So that is self-realization. So when you're self-realized, nothing in this material world disturbs you. The only reason we're disturbed is because we still think we are the body and the mind. Therefore, we're affected. And in Kali Yuga, it says the quality of Kali Yuga is that everyone is always disturbed. It means people get disturbed over nothing. And the smallest things disturb everyone completely. And everyone's walking around disturbed all the time. I see that, you know. As you get older, you just stay a little aloof. Because as soon as you start dealing with everyone, everyone's just so disturbed. Right? And you're disturbed yourself. So as soon as you start doing it, everything just goes crazy. So So as devotees, we go and preach to everyone, but we don't get involved because everything is very disturbed. Nature of Kali is becoming worse much quicker. So.
Yeah, what about the pastor? King Indra lost his
battery.
And he said, pick it up and fight with me.
Yeah,
he gave him a chance to pick it. Yeah, he said, kill me. And he could
have killed that one. But no, he said, you pick it up. Fight with me again. He's so good. His father was struggling. Okay, one more verse. As fire in the forest immediately burns to ashes an angry snake, so by the previous order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his disc, the Sudarshan Chakra, immediately burnt to ashes the created demon to protect the Lord's devotee. So what is the Bhagavatam teaching us? Surrender. Yeah, ultimately. What else is it teaching us?
Do not fear.
Yeah, do not fear. What is it? Yeah, depending on the Lord. Bhagavatam is teaching us, if Krishna wants to kill you, you're finished. And if Krishna wants to save you, you're not finished. Simple. So that's the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. So a devotee, we have to learn to be detached, and to tolerate and to accept our destiny. If Krishna wants to finish you now, you're finished. That's it. End of story. You're gone. And if Krishna wants to keep you, then you're kept. So it's up to Krishna what he wants to do. So when a devotee is pure and surrendered, he would just accept, Krishna, whatever you want. I don't mind. You want to kill me? Okay. You want to not kill me? Okay. That's up to you. So that's what the Bhagavatam is ultimately teaching us. This is the level of consciousness of a pure devotee. So, any more points?
Should there have been some said one time to Parishit Maharaj
Yeah, Krishna says that in the Gita. I think so. Any other points?
So they tell him the angry snake cannot come in, but Lord will send the fire.
Yeah.
Just continue.
Yeah, nothing can harm a devotee. Ultimately, nothing can harm a devotee. So. Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki?
Jai. Jai.